You're listening to the Yeshiva of Newark podcast. I'm your host and curator, Rabbi Avram Kivalevich, and I hope you enjoy this episode. With downloads approaching the million mark and an archival library numbering in the thousands, the Yeshiva of Newark podcast has been striving to continuously upgrade our content, professionalize our audio sound, along with altering approaches in light of much appreciated listener feedback. I firmly believe the niche has been carved out that resonates with many on the wide spectrum of observant Jews. This explains why we continually rank high in independent online lists of top yeshiva podcasts. That proud edifice is in real danger of toppling and disappearing. We need the help of our listeners to continue to record and edit, to promote a product that has been a balm and instructor to so many. Just $36. As a minimum donation from 1,000 of you out there will keep us afloat as a Newark of straight, intelligent, humorous discussion, lectures, debate, and inquiry, while the destructive waters of ignorance and identity politics, cyberbullying, crash around us. Your generous contributions will seal and galvanize this ark till it comes to a satisfying rest in an era of Moyer Tzdeya, heralding Mashiach, B'mheira, B'yameinu, Amen.
Shalom. We're presenting a shiur that was given by Reb Dovi Weiss a number of years ago. It is a shiur where Rabbi Weiss lifts the mundane chore of kashering kelim into a virtual adventure to the yesodos of kashrus throughout the Torah. Principles of tam ki'ikar, parnat, are elucidated, as well as seeing similar dynamics at work in hilchos kochim, cooking korbanos, and when that problem of noisar occurs. There are some questions, and I edited out a number of things because the quality of the audio, but I think it will be something that will give you an inspiration in terms of kashering for Pesach, and you will see the great interconnectedness of various areas of the Torah. Here it is.
Today we're going to be discussing the principles of kashering kelim in general with regards to milk and meat, something. You go away to on a trip, you rent a home which has a tray for kelim. How do you kasher those kelim? And specifically, how do you kasher Pesach tzikah kelim? Or how do you kasher chametz tzikah kelim to become Pesach tzikah? There is a pasuk, Parsha Stav, we read just a few weeks ago. It says as follows: Okli cheresh tevushabal yishaver, the meklin nechosh is bushala umarach v'shutach b'moyim. Over there, we're talking about a kli of which one used to cook kachim. Halacha is that many of the karbanos, besides the karban ola, either the kohen or the kohen and the bailim, even Yisraelim, are able to eat from the meat of the kachim. After they shech the animal, they put the dam, they do zrikas adam on the mizbeach, and then there would be a lot of meat to be eaten. So sometimes, if it was kodesh hakadoshim, so the kohen would be able to eat it, kohen and the male kohanim. If it was kosher kalim, so then everybody could eat. The kohanim would eat it, and the family would eat it. They could eat in Yerushalayim, they can invite you to their hotel room somewhere in Yerushalayim, and they'd be able to partake in the kachim. The problem was that the halacha is you have a very specific amount of time to eat that kachim. And if you if that day passes, so then the kachim becomes treif. And that treif is called nosar. You're not allowed to eat nosar. The halacha of eating nosar is actually in Isra Kares. So you can imagine if someone takes the meat from the carb and he puts it in his pot and he cooks up some broiled meat or boiled meat, let's say boiled meat, boils the meat, makes a goulash or something from the kachim, it's very delicious. But now we assume that the tam of the meat that was cooking up in the pot enters into the walls of the kelim. That's what we call nesinas tam. There's a nesinas tam into the walls of the kelim. So if there's a nesinas tam into the walls of the kelim, so now those kelim have in it a tam of kachim. Now, if you wait a day or two, right, after the time that you're allowed to eat the kachim, so then the same way you can't eat the kachim, there's any leftover meat, you can't use the kalim that have in it a tam of the kachim. So what are you going to do with those kalim to make sure that it removes that what's the tam of the nosa that's now in the pot? Why is it nosa? Let's talk about it. Let's talk very specific. A person brings a carbon chatas. He brings it 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, right? So he can eat that carbon chatas from Sunday afternoon until chatzos of that night. He has about, 10 hours, let's say. You have 9 hours to eat till chatzos. Minatora, you can really eat it till amorashach, but we go till chatzos. But now, you don't eat some of the meat. You don't eat some of the meat. And you wait till the next day, and the meat was never cooked, it was never eaten. So what do you do with that meat? It has to be burned. Fine. I did make some of the meat in this particular pot. I boiled the meat. So now, the pot, I ate the meat 4 o'clock in the afternoon, an hour later, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But now that pot has in it a tam kutchim. No problem. I can use the pot again at 6 o'clock, at 7 o'clock. But what happens when that pot reaches the point where it's past the time when I can eat kutchim? So the blia, the absorption of the tam of the kutchim that's in the pot, itself becomes nosar. So now I have to kasher the pot in order to be able to use that pot for something. How do I kasher that pot? That's the question. So the Torah tells us very simply, if it's a kli cheres that you cooked in, then you can't kasher the pot. A kli cheres, we assume, is so porous that any blia that goes into the walls of the pot, einu yotzei midof yol yolam, therefore that kli cheres cannot be used. You have to break it. There's nothing, no longer any use. The blia in the kli cheres is nosar, and it's finished. You can't use it anymore. However, let's say the pot that you used was metal. It was made out of some type of iron cast, made out of steel, made out of copper, whatever it was. So that's what the Torah says. In Bikli Chenachoshes Bushala, if you cook the meat in the Kli Nechoshes, the way that you kasher that pot is through Morak Veshutaf Bamayim. Without going into the details of Marika and Shtifa, basically in our terminology, what that means is Hagola. You took boiling hot water, you cooked up the boiling hot water, you took some of the meat of kutchim, you put it into that boiling hot water, the meat became boiled, it became edible, but now the blia from the meat went through the water into the walls of the pot. I have to kasher that pot. How do I kasher the pot? Well, I take the pot, I take another very large pot of water, I boil up that pot of water until it's a rolling boil, I take the pot with which I cooked kutchim inside, and I dip it inside the pot, and that's called Hagala. Why does that work? Well, we assume, since the blia from the kutchim went in through the medium of boiling hot water, so the blia comes out through boiling hot water. So that's called Hagala. Again, what's Hagala? Hagala is I take a pot of hot water, a large pot of hot water. You go to Muncie, you can go to one of the Muncie, they have these big cauldrons, you can take your largest pots, dip it in. I'm not sure if you'll get your own pot back, you can get your neighbor's pot back, but you dip it in, you take it out, you dip it in, it's in there for 2 seconds, for 1 second, you take it out, that's called kasher. That's very different, don't get confused, very different than tvila b'mikvah. We're not talking about toiveling something in the mikvah. You toivel something in the mikvah, you buy something new that was manufactured by a non-Jew, it has to go through a geirus process. That's what some of the Rishonim learned. The same way someone who's not Jewish becomes Jewish, they have to go through a geirus process, they have to go to the mikvah. A kli that you buy from a non-Jew that was manufactured by a non-Jew also goes through some type of, a little bit funny to think of geirus on a pot, but we use that terminology. It goes through some type of conversion, and therefore you have to do tvila b'mikvah. So that means that if someone were to go, or buy, let's say you would go to, your neighbor is selling their house, they have a sale, they have a garage sale, you want to buy their pots. They have a beautiful set of pots, and you need Pesach Nikah pots. This is great, so what am I going to do? No problem. I buy the pots, I have to do two things. I have to kasher the kelim, and then I have to be toivel the kelim, if it's made out of metal. So how would I have a pot, I ask the person, or it's obvious this is a soup pot. You don't cook things, you always cook things in a water medium, so I take that pot, and I take it to Borough Park, I take it to Muncie, we take it to one of these big cauldrons, and I dip it into the boiling hot water. Now it's kashered, now it's not treif anymore. But I also now have to, I was never toivel, I have to take it to the mikvah, dip it in the mikvah, now I can use those pots. That's simple. That's what it says. Morak v'shuta b'mayim. What also I can do, if I can't find a big cauldron, so I just fill itself up with boiling hot water. There's only a shtickle problem, and that is that I can kasher the whole pot, but I can't kasher the very top of the pot. So what I have to do is I have to take another boiling hot pot that's much smaller. One of these little soup pots, very small, and I have to boil that pot up. How do I boil that pot up? I keep it on the fire for a few minutes. Now it's boiling hot. I take that little pot, I dip it slowly into the larger pot so that the water spills over, and now I have a kosher pot.
These are all took into mind pots that were manufactured of bronze, metals, and stainless
steel.
But also porous materials like
yes.
ceramics.
Yeah.
What about in the age of plastics and paper goods? Do you have a similar question?
You don't have a similar. Usually, you don't cook in paper and plastic.
No, but if you buy a new. Cooked.
We're not talking about tvila. Tvila is one question.
I'm talking about tvila.
You're talking about tvila?
Okay. Plasticware.
No, plastic, there are certain things that mainly, Minatora, the only thing that has to be kashered is metal. Midrabban, glass also has to be kashered. Plastic and paper does not have to be kashered. doesn't have to be kasher. The cheres also doesn't. I'm sorry, does not require tefillah. Neither does cheres require tefillah.
Well, what's the basis that plastic doesn't have to be? In other words, in
the Torah says you have to be tarbal things that are metal.
Right.
Chazal added glass.
Right.
That's it.
The cauldron itself.
So yes.
Now that you dip the cauldron in it, yeah. The time from the pot.
How come that doesn't make the cauldron shreif? It's a good kasha. Listen, no, it's not a cliche. It's a klirisha. The cauldron's a klirisha.
The original time is a klirisha. When you put it to the cauldron, that's a cliche.
Yeah, but he wants to know. I just bought my shreif of pot, a shreif of pot from my non-Jewish neighbor. I take that shreif of pot, I go to the cauldron, and I take that pot, and I put the shreif of pot into a cauldron, which is a klirisha. It's actually not just a klirisha; it's boiling hot right now with the fire under it. So how come the treifus from the non-kosher pot doesn't go into the water and make the cauldron treif?
It's a secondary treif.
No, close.
Did you have to wait a certain amount of time until it became disgusting?
Yes, so that's so we're going to go mikal l'kol. We're going slow, which means we're going slow. So therefore, so we're going to go. We're going to get there. But let's go in a certain order because I hope it'll become. Where these halakhas seem complicated, we know what we have to do, but to understand them seems complicated. It's not complicated. We're just going to go take a few minutes. We're going to make halakha. I think we'll get a really good skira, close, a good overview of how these halakhas evolved and where they came from. That's where we start from. There is one thing that you notice in Parsha Sav that deals with kachim that's missing, almost glaringly missing. There's something missing there. It says if it's a kli cheres, then you can't kasher a kli cheres. It's so porous. It goes in so deep. It's like, I never really saw the inside of a kli cheres, but I have seen the inside of a wooden barrel. If you go to the winery, we went to the winery to check out how they make wine, how they make whiskey. So there was I was looking at the barrels. The barrels, the slats of the barrels are about that thick, maybe about that thick. And you could see the redness of the wine goes in maybe 3/4 of the thickness of the wooden barrel. You could see how porous it is. That's wood. My point is that kalim are porous. Cheres is very, very porous. If you're able to, right?
Stainless
steel is a good question. That's a big shiloh. Some rabbanim today say you do not have to kasher bichlal stainless steel because there's no blia at all. You don't have to kasher stainless steel. Period. And other rabbanim say you do. Matter of fact, there's a conversation online with one of the mashgichim from either the OK or the OU, one of the mashgichim. I think his name is Reb Chaim Cohn. I can't say for sure. He's Reb Chaim Cohn. And he was involved in koshering some stainless steel in some plant. And the non-Jewish colleague of his says, you know, you guys are wasting your time. I understand you have this issue of blia. He doesn't have to use the word absorption of foods that you can't eat. But stainless steel does not absorb. By definition, it doesn't absorb. That's the way they make it. He goes, well, we think that it does absorb. And then he tells the story that they were boiling up this gigantic vat or something, and it was completely clean. And then they filled it up with water, boiled it up, and they saw this like film on top of the water. So he said to them, he says, look, you see, there's film on top of the water. Like you see, it was clean beforehand. So where did that come from? It must have come from the walls. We put in clean water into a completely clean pot, and there's this like murky film on top of it. It wasn't from the non-clean water. It was clean water that we put in. So this person says, listen, I can't argue with empirical evidence. If this is what you're showing me, it's what you're showing me. Then he comes back a few weeks later. He says, you know what happens? When you buy it new, it's not porous. It cannot absorb anything. But the moment you heat it up, or if you dent it a little bit, if you heat it up to such a high extent where the fire is very high, it creates microfissures inside the stainless steel, and then it becomes absorbable. Okay, I don't know. It's still a question. Some say you don't have to kosher stainless steel because even if it's absorbable on such a small level that it's not really halakhically significant. And others say that it's not a problem. Rav Shechta, I've heard him say once that we should get the Rabbanim together and everybody should come to the conclusion, which is it sounds like he thinks is correct. Stainless steel is not absorbable, in which case you don't have to kasher stainless steel. All you have to do is clean it, and then you can use it for flechik, for milfik, for chametz, and all that stuff. The problem is you have to get all the rabbanim together to agree. That's going to be difficult, right? Right. So that's not so simple as we know, but it does make a lot of sense. I think one day we'll probably get to that point. I'm not sure if we'll be alive when we get to that point, but we'll get to that point. But let's stay on subject here. That subject. In Parshas Tzav, it talks about Hagolah. If you cook in a metal pot, the way to kasher is through Hagolah, boiling hot water. It went in through water, Bushalah. Cooking is with water. That's by definition. Bishul means the mind. So it went in through water, you can get it out through water. But look at this pasuk in Parshas Matos. Parshas Matos says as follows. By the way, this is exactly the case that we were talking about before. They bought kelim from their non-Jewish neighbors. Now they wanted to kasher it. But instead of buying the kelim from the non-Jewish neighbors, they had a war. And after the war, so they took all the spoils and among... Oh, thank you very much. And among the spoils were many pots and pans, and they wanted to use them to make food. So they had to kasher them. That's what we said before. We had to kasher the pots and pans. So they had to kasher it. How do you kasher pots and pans that you buy from a non-Jewish neighbor? We just said you take it into a boiling cauldron, or you fill it up with boiling hot water, and that's called hagala. But the pasuk tells us actually you need another factor. That is, the only time you can kasher something with hagala is if it was used, if the treifus went into the walls of the pot through a medium of hot water. Like if you make chicken soup with treif, you make chicken soup with some chazer in it, or you make is there something called chazer soup? I'm sure there is, right? So they make chazer soup. So the chazer, the bli of the chazer, went into the walls through the medium of water. So how do I kasher such a pot? Hagala. But if I fry chazer on a skillet, on a frying pan, there's no water. There was a fire under the frying pan, and there was a piece of treif on top of the frying pan. So there, the bli of the treif went into the pan through fire. If it goes in through fire, that I can't get it out through hagola. I have to get it out through fire. How do I get it out through fire? Not so difficult. Take the pan and put it into the fire, or blowtorch it and put it into the fire. That's what the pasuk says. Kol asher yalva ba'esh, taviru ba'esh. But kol asher lo yalva ba'esh, if it didn't come into contact with fire directly, it went in through the water medium, then taviru b'mayim, then you do hagola. So in Parshas Matos, when it deals with treifus, there's two mahalchim of kashering. It depends. If it went in through esh, you have to kasher it with a blowtorch. If it went in through water, then you kasher through agola. So the shaila is, the Gemara asks in Gemara Avodah Zarah, Dafayim Vav, the last daf in Avodah Zarah, he asks the following question. How come this idea of kashering something through esh you only find in Parshas Matos by the Wachemes Midyan? How come when you're kashering treifah, how come you don't find that in Parshas Tzav? We mentioned before, you take the kachim, and you cook it in a pot. So we said the way that you kasher the pot is through hagola. Why do you have to kasher the pot again? If you don't kasher the pot, tomorrow the bli in the pot becomes no tzar. It's like treif. It's more treif than chazer. If you eat chazer, you're over olam. You eat no tzar. We think, oh, it's kachim. It's not a problem. It's kares. It is a problem. So how do you kasher the no tzar? Hagola. How do you kasher the treif? It depends. Water, if that's the way it went in, hagola. If it went in through fire, you have to kasher it through a blowtorch. How come we don't say, hey, if the way that you were cooking the kachim was not through water, but you were frying, you were making, you know, spare ribs, right, on the spit, on the grill, so then you should have to kasher the grill, or kasher the spit, through fire, through a blowtorch. How come it doesn't say that in Parshas Tzav? That's the Gemara's question. Romile, Rav Amram, Rav Sheshes. Tan in the fifth Maramakam. Hashipud and Vahaskala Malabnon Ba'or. If you use a shipud, what's a shipud? You use a spit, Vahaskala, use a frying pan. The way that you kasher that is through what we call libud. Libud is a blowtorch. It's getting it out through fire. Why? Because it went in through fire, it goes out through fire. Vahatnan Gabi Kachim, but it says by Kachim, Hashipud, Magila Mechamin, you only need Hagola. Even the spit that was used via fire, so the bli went in with fire, you don't require a libun to kasher it, you can even have agola. What's the difference between the case of the kachim that's about to become nosar if I don't kasher it and the yisr? So based, in order to explain that, the answer to that question, let's learn something that I think many of us are probably familiar with. It's called the sugya of not bar not. Not bar not. What's not bar not? Lenny, what's not bar not? You're raising your hand.
Yeah, but I was... One is, does this apply to all treifus? Meaning, we use a general term,
yes,
treifus for anything non-kosher. Does it apply, let's say somebody cooked non-kosher fish in a pot, A, and B, what about if you cook not with water, but with some other liquid, milk? You had a big thing, milk, and you cook some treif meat.
Right.
Or treif something in there.
It's a good, very good question. First of all, it applies to all treif, not just meat. there was someone sitting at a, you know, the Gemara says if someone eats a certain fish, he can violate six malchios. Ocho potisa, loka arba, loka chamish, loka shesh, can violate six averis. Because it can have certain types of insects that are, it's a fish and it flies, they said that Rav Tendler was at a wedding, so someone told me, Rav Tendler was at a wedding, came to the rabbi table, and the rabbis were ordering, you know, they come by, you want meat, you want the chicken, you want the fish. So one rabbi orders the meat, so one rabbi orders the fish. So Rav Tendler, you know, has a great sense of humor, and he said to the rabbi, he goes, Rabbi Turk, it's not Rabbi, just, I mean, Danny's right here, it's not Rabbi Turk, but it says, Rabbi Turk, you know, you're something like this, I wasn't there, he goes, I see that you're refraining from ordering the meat, he was saying, like, you're trying to look from, you don't want to eat the meat, you know, you only violate one lav if you eat non-kosher meat, but you can violate six lavim if you eat non-kosher fish, so, and that happens to be true, so always order the meat, but there's nothing more treif about non-kosher meat than non-kosher fish. Same level. And in terms of the liquid, it doesn't matter if it's milk or water. I think it's the same.
Nosar treif or is nosar just
nosar? Nosar is more treif than treif.
More
treif than treif.
More
treif. Much more. It's kares. It's much more serious.
Yes.
I think so. I think it's the same. If the thing is filled with whatever liquid, as long as it's not, if it's a gel, it's something else. But the gel usually turns into a liquid through the cooking process. I think it's the same. That's very little. If you deep fry something, that would be considered hagala.
What if it's all?
I don't think that's not liquid. That's not considered bishul. If you spray it, or you put a slight amount of oil on the bottom, what's a hair, it's less than a centimeter, that's not considered, that's considered fire. That's like directly on the fire. That big nafkamina is also with regards to ein bishul achar bishul, but there could be bishul achar tzli. So when you saute something, that's considered tzli. That depends on whether you hold this bishul achar tzli. Let's not go. That's the last sugya, but it's all related. But let's just explain what. That's a treif as chazer. Nevel is treif as chazer. It's all treif as treif. Yes.
And one other question.
Sure.
You're not sure if it's considered bishul or sleep.
Yeah.
If you go by blowtorch, have you taken
yes.
Everything?
Yes. Blowtorch is better. Always higher. You don't have to do both. No. You can always blowtorch. You can always blowtorch. The question is, can you do hagola on something that requires a blowtorch?
What's the deal with burying in your ashes?
That's something else. Don't bury things in the ground, especially if they're alive. No. It has its makom in very specific and particular situations. Not what we're talking about. So let's discuss. Let's explain this. You had the question? So the Gemara gives a very important answer. This is the key. But let's go back. Let's explain not bar not. What's not bar not? Not bar not is very simple. The word not is simply short for no sein tam. And bar not means a double no sein tam. What's a double no sein tam? I take a pot and I cook, I take a pot, a soup pot, and treif is cooked in there. Treif is cooked in there. Let's say, forget treif. We don't eat treif. You cook meat in there. You cook chicken soup, right? So there's meat, a blia of basari in the walls of the pot. That's what we assume. So you take out the soup. The pot is completely clean now. You cleaned it. You made the soup an hour ago. Now the pot is, you poured it into some serving bowls, and now the pot is completely clean. And it's a fleshig dig a pot. That's what a fleshig. What's a fleshig dig a pot? I conflation it, right? So that's what we call one no same tam, because the nesinas tam went from the food through the cooking process into the walls of the pot. Now, an hour later, I want to make pasta. So I take the pasta and I put it into the pot and I make pasta. How do I make pasta? Boil up water, put the pasta in, and then I make pasta. So the tam from the basari, from the basar that went into the walls of the pot, now comes out into the pasta. So you and I would think, well, I don't know if you and I would think, let's just think, pasta, since you hold, I can't cook milchik in a fleshig pot, right? I can't cook milchik in a fleshig pot unless I kashrut it. So then, probably that the pasta has the status of being fleshig. Right? So if the pasta has the status of being fleshig, I should not be able to eat that pasta with milk. And yet the Gemara says you can eat that pasta with milk. That's what the Gemara says. I can take the pasta, eat it with milk. Now, Ashkenazim have a chumrah. It's not our first chumrah. It's not our last chumrah. That we don't eat it directly. We don't eat that directly with milk. But Me'ikar Adin, according to most Rishonim, you can eat directly with milk. That's why the Mechaber, that's what the Gemara says, almost Mefurish. I'll tell you why there's room to argue what seems to be a clear heter. Take a look at the third Mara, Malkum Itmar. Dogim Sha'olu Bekara. If you make fish or pasta, something parav, in a pot, that's Fleishik. Rav Omar, also the Ochlam Bekutah. Rav says you can't eat that with milk. We do not hold like Rav. We hold like Shmuel that says, Mutal Ochlam Bekutah, you can eat it with milk. Rav holds you can't because there's a Nesinas Tam. Shmuel says, it's not one Nesinas Tam, it's a double whammy. It's once in, once out. That's already so far removed from the original chicken soup that I made. It's called a Not Bar Not. It's like it's a removed Tam that comes out. It's not called Fleshik. I can eat the pasta with milkik. And that's the way we paskin me ikaradin. Okay, if you take a look at the line, dogim sha'alu bakara. It doesn't say dogim shenizbachlu bakara. It says dogim sha'alu bakara. So there's a sheet of Rashi and others that say, alu just means if you have something hot and you put it on a cold pot. But if you cook it together, that even Rav would say it's a problem. Cooking together, the Sinas Tam becomes so absorbed in and extracted out so much more intensely, that's a problem even to eat with milk. Eat it with milk, because even if it's only alu bakara. Or dogim sha'alu bakaras, that's mutter to eat with milk. But nishpashlu bakara, that's already a problem. That's what some hold. That's why the Rama says, lechatchila, you shouldn't eat your pasta with milk. However, if let's say I take this whole thing of pasta, the kids come home, and I mix it with the cheese, and I put the cheese, everybody's very excited. And then we realize, that was the fleshik pot. So, b'diavad, you can eat it. L'chatchila, you can't, but it happened. B'diavad, you can eat it. So that means we really hold that it's mutter. So, l'chatchila, you shouldn't because of the schumra of Rashi that says it's dafka olu, not nisbashlu. But, b'diavad, we know that we hold that's okay. Not by now. So now, let's think very simple. What? Most Mishnayos say it means you cooked it. But some say olu just means if you take a hot piece of fish and you put it on a cold pot. Or you take a cold piece of fish, you put it on a hot pot, there Rav says it's mutter, that doesn't become fleshik. But if you cook it together, everything's hot, the walls are hot, and the water's hot, and the pot is hot, and the food is hot, then we say that there's a problem of not bar not in that case. And it becomes fleshik. Even according to Shmuel. We don't hold like that. Shmuel says you can eat it with milk. Dafka if it's alu, not if it's bashlu. But I'm telling you that we hold, me'ikar hadin, that even if it's nisbashlu, it's mutter to eat it with milk. You can take your pasta that you made in a fleshik pot 5 minutes ago and eat it with milk. Midiyevet. Lechatchila, we don't do it. The Rashkenazim don't do that.
By alu,
you can do it lechatchila. If it's nisbashlu, lechatchila, we don't, but midiyevet, we do.
Alu is not cooking.
Right, that's what some of the Rishonim said.
So what is it then?
Yeah, if something hot, you put it on a cold pot, or you have a hot, you just it ends up there by mistake or on purpose. You put it there as a serving thing. That's the point. If they're both hot, some Rishonim are machmir, you can't eat that pasta with milk, which is our chumra lechatchila not to eat the pasta with milk. That's where it comes from. So let me ask you a question. If that's true, let's assume with the way we paskin the ikar adin, you can eat it with the milk. You can eat it with the milk. Why? Why can you eat it with the milk? Why is that pasta not fleshy? Time is so far removed, the pasta is not fleshik, right? Okay. So let me ask you a question. If that's true, then how come I can't go away to a B&B, what are they called, an Airbnb, and there's fleshik of pots? Everybody's asking me, Shailas, how do we kasha the pots? What are kasha the pots? Clean the pots. Even if the person who used it was there an hour ago, you just clean the pots. So the most that could be in the pot is a fleshik atam from the chazer shmelt they just made an hour ago. It's in the walls of the pot. I take my pasta, I take my chicken, I take it, I put it in the pot. Why not say it's a no same tam? And even if that trefa tam comes out into the food, not bar not, we hold, you can eat that with milk. The same way you can eat it with milk means it's not fleshik. So then why is it treif?
Because that's treif on top of kosher, which is different from the
milk. Why?
Why? The meat and the pasta. Yeah. First of all, the pasta is not milk. It's meat on top of pasta. You're not making the pasta tray.
Is the pasta fleshik?
We're saying it's not fleshik.
So then why is my food that I make in the tray for pot tray? You hear the question?
Yes.
If it's not fleshik, a haraya, it's not fleshik, I can eat it with milk. I can put cheese on and eat it.
No, but
so then why can't...
But he's saying as follows.
What's in the pot right now is treif.
Why?
Because it's treif.
The first one was treif.
Yeah,
it's true. But the first one was fleishik.
So, but that wasn't good. That's good. That's good.
Don't look at the beginning. What's the rabbanon about basa b'chalav? Lo sevash gedi b'chalav imo means that. I mean, that's pretty daraisa to me. Jules, yes. Even I got Jules to agree with me on this. Usually he's rolling his eyes. And he's straight. He's rolling. Now he's shrugging his shoulders. You're right. Originally there was treif in the pot. Here there's meat in the pot. Okay. You can't eat treif. You can't eat meat. Shkoyach. We know that. Now, you're cooking. There's a meat tam that goes into the walls. There's a treif tam that goes into the walls. Shkoyach. Now I remove everything. I clean everything. I take pasta. I put them in both pots. So the pasta should be, if the pasta is treif because of this pot, then it should be, there should be fleishik in this pot. And if it's not fleishik, then it shouldn't be treif. So some say, in Achinami, you can cook in a tray for pot, no problem. Because of not bar not.
With Rav, where he doesn't hold this way, if you went ahead and you didn't intermediate, you took the pasta. It's a necessary. You have no other pasta. Okay? You go ahead and you boil it two times. So you took out the...
Did you kasher the pot or not? I'm not talking about full kashering. You're telling me you kasher the pot. So kasher the pot. There's ways of kashering a pot. Sure. I'm talking about no kashering. If you kasher, you kasher. That's it. We're talking about how come before I didn't kasher anything. I go away. I want to use a tray for pot. What's the problem? The Meiri quotes Yesh. Listen to this Meiri and the fourth Maradav. Yesh chochachim lahakel. Chochachim is not a positive term. There are those who go too far. And they're makel, bar no seintam, ach bishar isurim. Even by treifus, not bar not. By the time I get to the pasta that I'm making in this treifa pot, somewhere in deep Missouri, it's not a problem. It's not bar not. Even if the people, I saw the people leaving, they said, oh, that was good pasta. I've used all the pots. We know they used all the pots. I can still smell the stuff in the house. Right? Doesn't matter. Not bar not. Is already so far removed from the original, it's not a problem. So my pasta that I make in there, the same way it's not fleishiks, it's not treifus. Veins are klum. The Miri says, not true. Disagrees. Why? It's easier to say that it's mutter. It's easier to say that it's mutter. Yet we assume, for some reason, that we don't. We assume, the halacha assumes, I can't just use a fleishik pot, even though it's completely clean. Why not? It's a good kasher, no? No? Do you hear the question? So let's give the answer. The Rashba says this, and this is going to very strongly relate to our original question of the difference between Kachim and Isser. He says as follows. There's a difference, listen to this line, it's a very important line. The difference between Hetera Bala and Yisro Bala, you're all saying it before. But now we have to explain what it means. We said before, one sec. You can't compare cooking fleishik in a pot and cooking treifus in a pot. Why? What's the difference? So I took treifus in a, I cooked the treifus in a pot, I cooked the meat in a pot. They're both on burners right next to each other. Let's keep it clear. One pot right here, chazer. One pot right here, completely kosher meat, and I mark them up. There's not going to be any confusion. So we're not getting into any sfeikas here. That's a different shear. Right? I cook it, satmar shchita. I cook it. And then it's all boiled up. I remove it. Now I have two clean pots. This one, the treif was cooked in it. This one, meat was cooked in it. I take my pasta. I put it in. Right? So, it's called not bar not. The tam went into the walls. Now it comes out into the pasta. Let me ask you a question. Even if there's a tam, how strong is that tam? I mean, come on. How strong do you think the tam is? What do you think? So there might be a tam, but it's a tam that the Rashba calls a tam kolosh. It's a weak tam. Makes sense. I mean, there might be a little tam. It's a weak tam. Weak tam.
So okay. Sense,
what do you mean? What do you mean?
What do you mean?
The halacha here.
Logic have anything to do?
Tell me one thing in halacha that's not logical. There's not one thing in the whole Torah that's not logical, except maybe Bar Aduma.
Really?
Yeah, tell me one thing.
I know. I'm going to give it to Boxer.
Eruv?
I can be in the middle of the book. I have no idea that there's an Eruv up, but if somebody says there's an Eruv, I can carry it.
Haim Amru v'Haim Amru. The whole reason why you can't carry an Eruv in the first place is only the it's rabbinic.
Right.
So the rabbis themselves said, listen, the whole thing is rabbinic because it looks a certain way. It looks a certain way. So they put up an Eruv, now we take a hecker so that you know that you're not going to make the difference between this place and the Rosh Hashanah.
So that alone, that whole concept there, that the rabbis did it, and then they took it, and then they
said, told you they did it? They told you?
Illogical.
Illogical?
But,
illogical to me at all.
Different discussion than we had over and over, so we'll
I love that discussion, but anyway. so let's explain the logic here. Let's explain the logic. So I have two pastas, the tale of two pastas, right? I have one pasta that has what we call a weak tam. It's a tam kolosh of trefus in it. And you have one pasta that has a weak tam of fleishik in it. Okay. Is there anything wrong with eating fleishik? No. Anything wrong with eating tref? So listen to this. And I think there's a tremendous musr here too, by the way. I was thinking about this last night. What a musr. You always have to... I remember going to a shiur of Rav Moshe Weinberger before I even met Rav Moshe Weinberger. Before I met him, meaning he was on Masada Kedushin. So I at one point, you know, it was okay to get to know him a little bit. But before that, there was a shiur in Flatbush. I think it was the Young Israel Flatbush. Many, many people. He gave a shiur. It was on Tisha B'Av. And someone, you know, they sent up these questions, I guess beforehand or during, and so he opened up the little note, and the question was, how can we improve in our Avodas Hashem? Something like that. Something like very generic. So he said, anything you learn, you sit down to learn something, whether it's halacha, whether it's agad, try to think, how can this apply to your life very specifically? Remember, that's what he said. That was probably 25, 27 years ago, something like that. So I was thinking, how can this apply to our lives? But let's first learn the halacha, and then what I think is a very nice application to life, especially as we move close to the schachos of Nisan and Pesach. So the Rashba says as follows: to maintain a problem, even a weak tam maintains a problem. You have something that's also that's a problem. It goes into the walls, it comes out of the walls. It's a weak tam now. To maintain an already existing problem, even if it's weak, even if it's a tam kolosh, it can maintain a problem. You have a problem, so you have a, God forbid, a cancer, so we got out 95% of the cancer. Is that enough? From what I understand, it's not enough. To maintain a problem, even if you have a tam kolosh, even a slight tam or a weak tam, has the capacity to maintain a pre-existing, already existing problem. Okay. But that's not really it's not so much chazaka, it's that the halacha of tam kolosh, that this weak tam has the capacity to maintain something that already exists. In a certain sense, like a chazaka to make, or you can use that term. However, by meat, the tam kolosh, it's not enough to maintain a problem. What do I have to do? I have to now take that, mix it with milk, and create a problem. Right? You hear the difference? To create a problem, you need much more than a tam. You need a tam bari. So the svar that I was saying, this is what they say: to get the rocket ship off the ground, to get it started, you need 95% of the energy. The moment it's 50 feet off the ground, it just goes on its own. So to maintain the energy, to maintain the problem, to maintain the... So once, you could say, by the way, it's the opposite letzad hatov too. Forget about problems. The person gets onto a good schedule, he gets into a good mahaloch, he has a good chavrusa, a good chevra, a good davening. Okay, so the moment you get into that role, you get rolling, okay, so it doesn't take, you always have to be on top of things, but I have my chavrusa, I have this, and I don't speak Lashon Hara. So it doesn't take that much to stay in that path. But if you're not on that path to create that, you can spend your whole lifetime trying to create that motion. To create that motion could take so long and so much energy to stop watching. You know, we watch TV to stop. It's impossible. But the moment you take the TV, you throw out the window, and you start a new mahaloch. So then, oh wow, it was like, you know, withdrawal for like a year or a month or whatever it is. But after that, it's like, you know, I'm spending my time so much smarter. Like it's so amazing. My whole life changed. But to get yourself to do that, it's very difficult. It's almost impossible. So you have the vart to maintain a problem, even a tam kolosh. That's why if you have a tam de isura and you cook in a fleshik a pot, that weak, it's only a weak tam in the pasta. Can't eat it. Because a weak tam can maintain an old problem. But you have fleshik. So does this pasta have a tam of fleshik? What's the answer? Yes, it has a tam of fleshik. A weak tam of fleshik. Is there a problem with tam of fleshik? No. How does it become a problem? If I cook it with milk and I create a new problem. You can't create a new problem with a tam kolosh. That's the svara. Now let's explain kasher and kalim. Why does this help? Let's explain. You were asking the question, Warren. You asked the opposite question of what the Gemara asked in a certain sense. Warren asked before, if something requires hagalah, and you do libun, so you take your blowtorch, Warren's all excited, he gets himself a blowtorch, he probably has one already. He probably has one. And he goes to his pots.
And a chainsaw.
Right? Better we didn't know that. And he takes his blowtorch, and you know, let's get out the pot on his front lawn. Downing, everybody's selling. They start selling. The prices on Downing go really low. I start buying. Right? He's blowtorching all the pots. What's the halacha? 100% fine. Even though those pots weren't used with fire, they were used with water. What's the halacha? You went higher. You did a more intense form of kasher libun. But let's say you took a skillet or a frying pan that really needs libun, and you did hagol on it. The opposite. You take all your frying pans, you take your grill, you take everything that you use with direct fire, and you take that, and you put it into the boiling hot cauldron of water. So what happens there? So the Gemara says, the Rashbam explains, you know what happened? Not nothing. The Hagola got out most of the time, and you know what it did? It created what? A Tam Kolosh. So now, it created a Tam Kolosh. So, is that going to be a problem or not? It depends. The Torah says, if it was treif and it required fire, you need fire. What happens if I do Hagola? I do Hagola, it gets out most of the Tam and it lowers the level and intensity of the Tam, but Tam de Isura maintains, even a Tam Kolosh maintains Tam de Isura. So you would not be able to kasher a treif pot, a frying pan with Hagola, because even though we would get it to a point of Tam Kolosh to maintain a problem is a problem. However, by kachin, and this is making a big assumption, so Machogas Rambam and Rider, we're not going to go into every detail. But the Rambam holds, when were they actually kashering these kalim? You cook kachin. So now I don't want, the moment that the time passes, the moment Amar HaShachar comes, or the next night comes, the bliya inside the kli becomes, what's it called? Nosar. So I have to kasher that. When do I kasher that? I kasher that before it becomes nosar. Before it becomes nosar, so then what happens? I take the spit, I take the frying pan, I take the grill, and I kasher it with hagolah. What's that going to do is to create a tam kolosh of kutchin. Now that tam kolosh, is it trade yet? Not yet. So now when the time comes, it has to create a new problem. Create a new problem, tam kolosh doesn't create a new problem.
And what does he just make that assumption that it was before? Makes that assumption that it was before?
That kasher was before? Yes. Take a look at the last line of the fifth Marambakam. Why is there a difference between kutchim and shreif? The last line, Amalir of Amambri Ma'inyan kutchim eitza gu'ule goyim. Don't compare kutchim, the kasher of kutchim, to gu'ule goyim, which means shreif. Hocha hetera bala, hosam isura bala. So you can understand that to mean is the kashering took place. If it takes place before it becomes nosar, then all you need is hagolah, even on that which you would think requires libun. Hagolah is enough. It still has a tam. Yeah, but it's only a tam kolosh. Yeah, but isn't a tam kolosh a problem of treif? It's not treif yet.
It's just a big assumption.
It's a big assumption. That's the way the Rashba learns the Gemara. Well, that's the way that we're going to learn the Gemara. The Ram.
After the time frame where nosar.
Then according to this, you'd require libun. Yeah. Require libun. So now, what does that have to do with us? Pesach is in a few weeks. You know what it has to do with us? Well, it has everything to do with us. When you kasher chametz nekid kelim before Pesach, is that like kashering something that's treif? Or is it kashering something that is not yet treif? It's before Nosar. Most of the Rishonim learn, that chametz is heter bala. Of course, it's before Pesach. And since it's before Pesach, I can kasher all my kelim using Hagolah. I do not require any libun at all. I don't have to leave it on my oven. I don't leave it on my grill. I don't leave it on my stove top. I can take my entire stove and dip it into the boiling hot cauldron. No problem at all. Now, by the way, that sounds funny because no one does that, but it's not funny at all. I'll explain why. Because anything that requires Hagala, or anything that's enough with Hagala, again, let me just explain. You understand why Hagala is enough for everything? Because since the Hechsher is happening, before it's Shreif, before it's Asa, before it's Pesach, so then what's Chametz before Pesach? It's like Kachin before Nosa. It's like Milchuk before it becomes Basa Bechala. It's like Trey. It's like pleasure before it becomes Basa Bechala. So at that point, there wouldn't be not problem. And I only need Hagolah for everything. But it only made a Tom Kolosh of Chametz. Yeah, but when Pesach comes, I have to create a new problem of Chametz now. Matter of fact, you could even say stronger. You could even say that before Pesach, it's not only not Treif, it's not only not Chametz, it's not only not problem, it's not Chametz at all. There's no such thing as Chametz before Pesach.
Right.
It's not Chametz. You go home, we're going to eat a bagel. This is not, the bagel there is not Chametz. It's a bagel. There's no such thing as Chametz until Pesach. Or maybe Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach, Chatzos, already we can talk about, they have Chametz. Before that, it's not, we can call it Chametz. I'm getting rid of the Chametz. It's not Chametz. So it's not, it's just like Nosar in a certain sense. You don't say it's Nosar before it becomes Nosar, but it's not yet Nosar. Before it becomes Nosar, nothing. So that's what many, there are those who disagree with this. I'll explain maybe why. But that's the way most of the Rishonim passed it. That's the way many of the Rishonim passed it. Before Pesach, kashering things for Pesach is hetera bala. You're kashering it when it's heter. So therefore, you can always use, you don't have to kasher everything, you just got to get it down to a tam kolosh. And the way that you get it down to a tam kolosh, even that which was used through fire, you can kasher through hagolah. Oh, but now there's a tam kolosh, and when Pesach comes, it's going to be a problem. No, it's not going to be a problem, because on Pesach, you have to create a new din chametz. You don't create a new din chametz on a tam kolosh. Yes. That's one of the reasons why some. I'm saying this is the way many of the Rishonim pass it. Chametz also mashu zol midrabbanan. Right? That's only for sure. It's for sure only an issa derabbanan. Davar sheyesh lo matirin. So it's still, even if chametz also b'mashu, but a tam kolosh, even if a tam kolosh is qualitatively different. It's not a mashu. Chametz also mashu means if I have a little bit of bread, if I take many pieces of that little bit, I'd have a bagel. A tam kolosh means it's not like bread that tastes a certain way. It's qualitatively a different level of chametz, and therefore that wouldn't be a problem. Yes.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please take a moment to share this or any of the many episodes available on our platform with friends in order to help grow our community. Until next time, shalom.